Representative Nelson, I'll move House File 3562 to be passed and referred to taxes.
That's where it should go, Madam Chair. Thank you. Members, on 3562 and right after this will be 3563. What we've done with alternative fuels, we've kind of taken care of the supply side, if you would. As you know, for several years we've subsidized ethanol production, and we've got ethanol production and biodiesel up and running and producing in pretty good quantities. What this bill does, and the one to follow, is addresses taking care of the demand side. If we're serious about using these alternative fuels, I think we need to put some incentives in there to get the people to go out there and buy the vehicles that are actually going to burn that and put those vehicles on the street. This bill of 3562 deals with businesses that would purchase alternative fuel vehicles, provides a tax credit for them based on the size of the vehicle, and you'll notice that it's up to $500 a year for a truck weighing less than 10,000 and up to $1,000 for a vehicle weighing more than 10,000. But it would be limited to 50% of the actual expense incurred if they retrofitted their vehicle. And that is the limit of my testimony, Madam Chair.
Members, do you have any questions? We just about have a quorum. Any questions, members? Yes. We do have a quorum, so I'll call the meeting officially to order. And Representative Leader, did you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and Representative Nelson, I didn't see it, but I was going to look at the bill and I haven't, but that's strictly for conversion. Because there are a lot of E85 vehicles now and you wouldn't be giving them a credit. That's come from the manufacturer, is that correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Leader, that is correct.
Any other questions?
No, Madam Chair.
Oh, yes. Representative Abrams has a question.
Madam Chair, Representative Nelson, whenever I see income tax credits, alternative fuels, and motor vehicles, I think of the Arizona experience in which the way it worked, Representative Nelson, is that literally every senior in Sun City ended up with a golf cart for free. Every new car sold in Arizona, the dealer put on an alternative fuel source so that the price of the vehicle would go way down, and that they had to call a special session of the Arizona legislature to repeal it. And I point out that the program was a program that the Republican Speaker of the Arizona House had absolutely insisted upon as part of a budget deal. Now, nothing in this bill is going to be taking the cost of new vehicles down by 50% or anything like that happened in Arizona, or giving seniors a free golf cart. This bill doesn't go in that far, does it, Representative Nelson?
Madam Chair, Representative Abrams, it doesn't, and it certainly isn't the intent to take it that way. It's to encourage converting them, that's for sure. And as that moves from here to taxes, we certainly will want to study that in depth, I would think, Representative Abrams. So. I'm older, but you're much wiser, Representative Abrams.
No, I just made the mistakes earlier than you, Representative Nelson, that's all.
I appreciate that advice and that hint on this and the one following.
Any other questions, members? Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and Representative Nelson. I think, too, if you, before you go to taxes, maybe you should consider what a vehicle is. I can see some golf operations operating a whole fleet of vehicles, and it doesn't differentiate here, and they could convert them all in 1 year. And maybe you want to confine them to vehicles that pay a motor vehicle license tax or something. Just a suggestion. I don't disagree with what you're doing, but I think I agree with Representative Abrams. I'm aware of what happened in Arizona.
Madam Chair, Representative Leader and Abrams, I appreciate those hints. I was not aware of what happened in Arizona.
It's big time.
Okay, seeing no other questions, I'll renew my motion to pass and refer to taxes, House File 3562. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Nay. Motion's carried. And then, Representative Nelson, I will move House File 3563 to pass and be referred to taxes.
Madam Chair and members, you'll notice that this is very similar bill, and the nuts and bolts, if you would, are on page 4 with the new language. And it's where the first bill was for businesses. This would deal with individuals, and I would think that we would need to follow the same advice that Representative Abrams and Leader gave on the 3562.
Any questions, members?
Madam Speaker, or Madam Chair?
Representative Abrams.
Mr. Representative Nelson, I recall when a similar bill was winding its way through Congress. One of the problems is that some of the hybrid vehicles are basically taking the miles per gallon from maybe 22 to 26 miles per gallon. I guess I'd be more interested in this if you had a minimum EPA MPH of some sort, so that you're not rewarding SUVs that basically have a dual fuel type and actually trying to get the higher mile per gallon vehicles on the road. I think that Senator Hatch and Senator Grassley were involved in that issue, so I would hope that as this bill winds its way to taxes, that we look at some minimum fuel efficiency so that we're just not rewarding a minimal improvement, Madam Chair.
Representative Hoffman. Thank you, Madam Chair. And maybe you said it and I missed it, but is there an intention that actually both of these would move forward? Are they complementary? Do they, or is the assumption that the tax committee sorts out what moves forward?
Madam Chair and Representative Hausman, like all bills, it's up to the bodies if they want to meld the two together. My wish in coming to them, and I'm carrying it for a senator, but is that they would go separately. I see them as separate. I see 3562 being directed more towards business and 3563 more towards the general population. But I do think that all of the comments made, especially by Representatives Abrams and Leader, have to be implemented and included in either or.
Okay, seeing no other questions, I'll renew my motion to for House File 3563 be passed and referred to taxes. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's carried.
Madam Chair, thank you, members.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. Next bill we have is House File 3482, Representative Hackbarth. And I will move House File 3482 to be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members. This is a bill that the result of some language that we passed last year to do a study on the gas tax or the gas usage of all-terrain vehicles. We have a number of accounts, snowmobiles, boats, etc., that use that take a portion of the gas tax money and set it aside in dedicated accounts. And I believe this account hasn't been looked at since about 1985. So we passed a law last year that said that we're going to do a study. The study came back, and this is the result of that study, that the gas tax should portion that goes to all-terrain vehicles should be increased. And that's why we're here today, members.
Representative Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What, and I don't know whether maybe a fiscal note doesn't work for this, but what is the, what's the impact on the highway user trust fund?
Madam Chair, Representative Halsman, I believe it's approximately $600,000 that would go into the all-terrain vehicle account. An additional $600,000.
And Madam Chair and Representative Hackbarth, do you have in your mind what is the total amount of gas tax money right now going to the total between snowmobiles and all-terrain vehicles? Kind of grand total.
Madam Chair, maybe we should bring up the DNR that could talk about that. I think they might have some of those figures better than I would. I could make a guess, but maybe the DNR would know better.
Someone that has those question answers for us? Michelle, please state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tom Danger from the Trails and Waterways. For the total, I can only guess also. I would have to go back and get that information for you.
I had heard it was $15 million. Could it be that much?
Madam Chair, it could be close to that. Because if you're looking at also the water record, that's the one that I don't have in my mind, how much goes into there.
I think, members, you know, this committee has always worried about losing money from highways, and I mean, that is my understanding, that it's already at $15 million, and my understanding was that that really we're talking, some would argue that this percentage could in fact mean over $1 million of an increase.
I think John Walls has some information for us.
Madam Chair, Representative Housen, I scribbled a few things down on a piece of scratch paper before I came to committee today. Currently, there's about $16.5 million siphoned off of the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund for things such as ATV, snowmobile, boat landings, and forest roads and bridges. Of that total, excluding forest roads and bridges, it's about $15.5 for the ATV, snowmobile, and boat usage. Currently, according to the February forecast that MnDOT provided us, the ATV percentage is roughly $965,000 under current law. The bill would change it to $1.73 million to the ATV account.
That is quite a bit different than we heard, and I just think we really have to take a serious look at those numbers. 15.5 already, and this would be another 1.73. I mean, this is starting to mean significant roads in greater Minnesota that don't get done.
Representative Leader, did you also have a question earlier? Or? No? Okay. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We're doing that, Bob, while you testify. Exactly what this account, are we, and what is the deal? I use the funds or the fees for regarding the ATVs.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, Mr. Danger can probably answer that better than I could too, but we do maintenance on ATV trails. We build ATV trails. It's much like the snowmobile grant and aid system where ATV clubs can apply for money to groom trails and repair trails and build trails. And also, DNR enforcement uses a lot of the money, and we appropriate that money. The legislature does to DNR enforcement and also to local units of government for enforcement. So those are just some of the areas that this money is used for. Also, we built an ATV park up by the Gilbert area, Gilbert in Virginia. We used money from that account to build those that park up there and to maintain that park and keep that park open. Maybe Mr. Danger can add something that I forgot, but that's a number of things that we use that money for.
Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair, I've got some people that are really interested in ATV trails and are concerned about the possible rules, regulations, and any other statutes that might go into effect to negatively impact their ability to ride and their young people. And I'm just wondering, they've asked me in the past, you mentioned building the park ATV trails. Is there anything in the plans for building, expanding that, you know, going someplace else other than the one park up there at Gilbert in Virginia?
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, we are expanding the park up in Virginia and are in Gilbert over into Virginia, and that's going to be a huge facility up there. Also, I understand that there's in the bonding bill somewhere, I believe there's some money for an ATV park. I'm not even sure where that is, but through the bonding process, there's some money moving to build another ATV park someplace. That's the only one that I know. And I think down by Appleton, there's also the county down by Appleton is opening up a ATV park down there, too.
Appleton, Minnesota?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Earhart?
Well, Madam Chair, my understanding is there's some people that would like to testify against this, and I don't know if you're going to open that left or you have some other in favor of this.
Okay.
I can wait until after testimony if...
Are there, do we have someone to testify? I have Jean Larimore. Would you like to testify? Welcome to the committee, and if you'll please state your name for the record.
Thank you. Let me get my stuff here. You move fast. My name is Jean Larimore, and I work with a group called I'm part of the Jack Pine Coalition, which is a group of people mostly in north central Minnesota, Cass County, Hubbard County, parts of Beltrami, and parts of Crow Wing. And our purpose as a group is to bring some control to the use of ATVs on public and actually on private land, because there's so much... Some of the people I work with are farmers, and our property is constantly damaged. I have a handout here. If the page could help me, page. I can do it myself.
The page is coming.
Representative Hackbarth described that last year's legislative session resulted in a statute directing the DNR to conduct a study of on this issue. And he talked about one of the goals of the study, which was to find out on average how much an ATV registered for recreation use uses in 12 months. There was a second goal to the study that Representative Hackbarth didn't talk about because the DNR didn't analyze the data. That goal was to find out where ATVs are ridden. And in the questionnaire used, there were three possibilities. The respondent could say they rode on how many days did they ride on public land, meaning public roads, public trails, how many days did they ride on in ditches, you know, the right-of-ways of public roads. And the third category was how many days did they ride on private lands and private trails. It was a good study. It has some flaws that are not necessarily the fault of the people doing the study. This was contracted out by the DNR to an organization. Looks like this. The organization is called TomTech. Seems to me quite professional. As immodest as this may sound, before I retired, I was Director of Research and Information Systems for the Minnesota Department of Corrections. So I do have some experience with this kind of research. Anyway, they designed a pretty good study. A lot of money went into that design to get data, how to get data for both goals. Not just how much gas did you use, but where did you ride your ATV? In the report you have in front of you, you'll see that inexplicably the DNR didn't analyze the data. It's no longer inexplicable. They didn't analyze the data, but there was testimony in the other body that they ran out of money to conduct the study, so you know, that data wasn't analyzed. Senator Marty, learning of this, called the DNR for the data, got it, and I spent a weekend going through it. And although I'd certainly be happy to answer any questions about how I, you know, how I did this, the bottom line is that of the days spent riding ATVs, over 70% were spent on private land. 15% were spent on public trails and roads, and 15% of riding days were spent in ditches, in effect. Now, this raises the issue, which is why I'm here, to raise the debate of to raise the issue. There is no justification in my mind. There is no logic to take money generated by people riding on private land and move it, and which is a great majority, the vast majority of ATV riding, and move it for the people, the relatively few people, who ride on public land. What you have is, in effect, a tax on the many, and the only benefits go to the few. Those figures may be somewhat surprising. They shouldn't be, because 5 or 6 years ago, there was another study by the DNR, by the Generals, another, I think, husband and wife team who did a much more elaborate study, and there's a lot of interesting, you know, information there and some nice quotes, but they also found that over half of people who own registered ATVs never ride them on public land, even though they're registered for recreation. Now, the people I work with, a lot of people in the Jack Frank Coalition have ATVs, and most of them register their ATVs for recreationally. They don't necessarily have farms, but they never go on public trails, and not because they don't. That is not their idea of fun, to go trail riding. They putz around on their 10 acres, or 40 acres, or their 80 acres, and they raise the issue: why are we paying? Why is the money we spend on gas going to a very small group? The study referred to by Representative Hackbarth, the most recent one here, shows that just about 5% of registered ATV owners belong to a club. And it's the club people who make up ATVAM who, frankly, for years have claimed to represent the ATV community. There really is no ATV community. There are at least two communities. One are the trail riders, who spend a lot of money on their machines. They drive up north and go on public trails. Unfortunately, sometimes they go off of public trails. And then there are the ordinary people who mostly live up north who don't use them for this purpose. They are not represented by ATVAM. And they would like their money not to go there. Do you have any questions?
Members, any questions? Representative Bornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In your handout, you talk about the kind of damage, that there's damage to that ATVs have to roads. I'm not from Northern Minnesota, so I'm not as familiar as others may be, but could you just very briefly describe some of that damage?
Some of it, I take you, the worst damage I've seen, which some of you may have seen through the newspapers, was the damage in the Foothill State Forest of the Spider Lake area. There are designated trails there. It is not as though there weren't trails for ATVs to ride on, but they didn't stay on them. I mean, that is really the problem with developing trails is we haven't found out yet how to keep people on them. So there was moonscape like scenes there in Spider Lake. Anytime you go, as this weekend I drove to Brainerd, and from the cities here, and on the new highway, the new 371, Already the ditches are being damaged, you know, along that by ATVs.
Yep.
That can't be more than a year old, if that. So that's, I mean, frankly, one could go on a long time, you know, about the damage.
Thank you.
Representative Hornstein?
No.
Okay. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Your conclusion, then, is that not so much money should be spent by the VNR for their trails and so forth. And that was in the last paragraph.
Right.
So what are you suggesting, then, by your testimony?
What I'm suggesting is, well, first of all, you have the obvious three alternatives to you, as any committee in the legislature does. Pass it, don't pass it, or amend it. What I would like to see is, and actually this appeared in a bill offered by Senator Marty in the Senate, to have the allocation from the trust fund, the highway fund, to the ATV fund reflect the number of user days ridden on public land. Not the ditches, because to the people who are wrecking the ditches, their gas tax doesn't even go to fix roads. So the idea here would be those people riding on trails on public land, and that when you figure that out, that comes down to roughly $210,000. So an amendment to this bill, which would certainly make sense to me, would reduce that figure, to whatever. I didn't bring the other bill with me, but it would have the effect of resulting in a slightly over $200,000 a year going to the ATV fund managed by the DNR.
Madam Chair, instead of 1.73 million, I think that was the figure that Representative Mr. Wallace gave.
1.73 million, that's correct.
Yeah.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Aylward, do you know, and maybe it's there's some person I haven't caught it, do you know, has there been an estimate or has anybody did an analysis of the damages as what would be considered replacement or trying to fix them back up again? Is there a cost? I know there's a cost there, but I don't know. I didn't see anything in here that says, you know, the damages amount to so much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sorry. I don't know that number. I know I work with a group that meets with DNR staff quarterly to exchange views and to, you know, find out what we're doing with each other. And one of the things we've asked in the past is how much damage is out there, particularly in state forests. And I think it's fair to say that the DNR does not yet have a handle on that. In other words, I don't think they could say we have $3 million worth of damage, $30 million worth of damage, or whatever. Now, if I'm wrong, I certainly apologize, but I haven't. We've asked that question and haven't gotten an answer. I've heard testimony in a committee in the other body from the engineer, the county engineer from Washington County, and he says it took Washington County about $1,500 a mile to fix road damage. I think that would add up pretty fast, just, you know, on my trip to Brainerd.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I know that Representative Hackbarth, if you, in talking with you with the DNR, have got any idea what they spend on repair of public lands or where it might deal with private situations here or public trails and stuff, road ditches, as far as costs to the DNR that we pay through our taxes.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, I know that there is a ATV damage account set up at the DNR, and we'd have to bring Mr. Danger up to discuss that account and how many dollars are in there and how many have been expended from that. He could probably talk to that more than I could. But.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm concerned that if we go ahead and put a tax on it, there's nothing in there to address. address the issue of damages here are being taken care of, then we can just continue to add, and we continue to add, and there's nothing to delineate the fact that there has to be some repair done to the trail on a regular basis, not just whenever we feel like it. So, I'm concerned that we've got this add-on that we're not also speaking to the damages that go along with it, and I'd like to know what that is.
Representative Hafford.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, we'll bring, when it's our turn to bring some other folks up, I don't know where we're at with for and against and that sort of thing. We'll bring some folks up that can answer that question, please.
Representative Hafford, I have no other testifiers with,
okay.
So whenever folks begin. Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My understanding from having tracked this for some years is, in fact, it's local governments, usually counties, through their property taxpayers who are repairing. And Washington County has just been in the newspaper in the last week or so. They decided some time ago they were simply not going to allow it in the ditches anymore because they thought the cost was so great. Now, I think a year later or something, they're analyzing that, and they're discovering that they have, in fact, saved a lot of money, and they're confirming the decision they made. And what happens is several things. One, you have more erosion. But two, I didn't know this, ditches are designed in such a way that you hope a car can kind of ride it out and have less damage. But if there are ruts in the ditch, then suddenly the damage is worse. And so for a variety of reasons, they feel that their Washington County found that their ban in the ditches was in fact a positive for their local property taxpayers.
Madam Chair? We do have the All-Terrain Vehicle Association of Minnesota that would like us to respond to some of the things that Mr. Larimore has talked about.
Very fine. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Larimore, for your testimony.
Don't get anxious, Ray. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ray Bone, and here representing the All-Terrain Vehicle Association of Minnesota. And what I'd like to do is just discuss some of the elements that Gene brought up.
Welcome to the committee.
Pleasure. First of all, the study that you have before you was completed in conjunction with three departments. The Department of Revenue, Department of DNR, and Department of Transportation. It's my understanding all three commissioners have reviewed the study and have signed off on it and have agreed to it. This has been the case with virtually all the gas tax studies that I've been involved in and the ones that I know about in terms of especially the snowmobilers being involved with them. So I think it's my understanding all three departments are in agreement that this is the appropriate allocation of resources. The public versus private recreation and what should be paid for and what shouldn't be paid for out of the unrefunded gas tax, you know, in our budget, we spend about $1.75 million for enforcement every year. If there is a wetland issue, say it's caused by an ATV, someone's in there ripping up a wetland on private land, that enforcement officer, in fact, can go in and can write tickets on that private land. You know, we do pay, in many respects, we pay for that enforcement activity on private land. If there's an ATV that's chasing a deer, for example, and goes on to private land, you know, or is doing it on private land, that conservation officer then can actually go in and can arrest that person as well. So much of our activities are involved on private lands. And so I guess I feel to see the distinction between public and private lands on most of our activities, because our activities do take place both publicly and privately. And if you look at the figure, the amount of money that we spend, and if you look at the statistics that Mr. Larimore spoke about, if you take 70% of that $1.75 million, and if that's being done on private land, and then if we are no longer responsible for activities on private land, and in fact this money should go then totally to the trails account, you know, then it would seem to me that
70% of that $1.75 million then should go back into the trails account and should be taken out of enforcement. And someone else needs to accept responsibility for dealing with this activity on private lands then. The damage account, to put this the damage into perspective, we hear a lot about damage. 2 or 3 years ago, the All-Terrain Vehicle Association, Representative Hackbar, a number of folks agreed to take $500,000 out of the ATV account to use for a, quote, damage account where people could come in and, in fact, draw money against that account for damage caused by ATVs. And in the last, I think it's been almost 2 years, that account is now down to $350,000. So we've spent, you know, we have $150,000 of damage in a couple of years. Now, in terms of President Anderson, in terms of maintenance of the actual trails, Trails and Waterways actually gets a couple million dollars a year out of the ATV account. And from that, they do maintenance on trails, you know, the whole trail designation process. The grant needs is actually a separate line item, but that, again, is all in an effort to keep people on the trails, you know, as best we can. And I think we are making incremental gains on that. And I know people have said, well, and Mr. Larimore said, well, we can't keep these people on trails. And I guess what I would like to do, if I can find it here, is reference an article, actually was an MPR, Minnesota Public Radio's article, was in October of last year, where the conservation officer, Officer Jeff Burkham, from the Beltrami Island State Forest, had this quote. "I haven't seen those real blatant wetland violations," Burkham said. "And are they out there? Certainly they could be out there. But I have not seen them as much as 2 years ago. I think some of that has come from just having the idea that when you get on an ATV, you may have some responsibility, you may have some more responsibility than you thought you did." So I would submit to you that I believe the culture out there in this activity is changing, and I think it's changing, frankly, fairly rapidly. But in order for us to keep that going, we really need these additional funds. And as Representative Hackbar said, we have not come back to the legislature and asked for an updated gas tax study like some of the other entities have over the years. And the reason that we haven't come back and asked for those resources is because we had a lot of money in our account. And frankly, we were having a lot of difficulty working with DNR getting trails on the ground. And it has now come to the point where we felt we had to go back and take another look at that gas tax allocation and move from there. And that's the result of what we're doing. I'd like to just talk about one other thing. If I could get the page to hand this out. APDOM recently commissioned a study, an economic impact study of ATVs in Minnesota. And what we found, and this was just released last week, is that ATV users contributed about $642 million in retail sales directly to Minnesota's economy. And if I can put that in some perspective, this same organization, this was done by the University of Minnesota Extension, their tourism center. They did a study similar to this with snowmobiles. Snowmobiles contribute $199.6 million per year. We contribute, ATVs in our activity contributes 3.5 times that. So I would submit to you that this activity has tremendous potential if we can harness it and harness it properly for the state of Minnesota, for our economy. The economic contributions include 14,449 jobs, $429 million in wages and salaries, and $86 million in state and local taxes. What we're asking for, members, is an additional $600,000. We believe that's an appropriate number. We believe all three agencies have signed off on that, and we just believe that that's a number that hopefully you will agree should be contributed to us.
Okay, that's going to happen. We have about two or three more things, so I'd like to wrap up in another 5 minutes, if that's okay. I know you have some other testifiers. I believe. Representative Hausman.
He just again mentioned $600,000, but I was thinking that we had, by our fiscal analyst, been given $1.73. So we're talking about two different numbers when we talk about this increase.
Mr. Walz?
Madam Chair, I just did a simple calculation with what MnDOT had projected OSEC gas tax collections to be, and that number was $643,600,000, and took 1.5% of that to get $965,000 versus 1.737. Given the law change, there might be a cost that I'm not attributing that comes off the top first, but I would have to double check.
Madam Chair, if I could just this is a number that's been given to us by DNR, mm-hmm. so that's where I'm getting the number.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's if you want DNR to come down and address that issue, but that's where I'm getting the number from.
Representative Hogan, it sounds like DNR they weren't able to give us the total number. Which I knew to be about $15 million, and I understand it's 15.5, so they may not be the best source for those numbers. One of the things, members, that I'm concerned about is what we haven't yet done as a legislature. A few years ago, the Office of the Legislative Auditor did a really very, as they do so well, a comprehensive trail study. When they did a study on the lottery that was fairly damning, we rushed the next legislative session to enact the reforms. The Office of the Legislative Auditor made very specific recommendations it is a good read if you've never read this. And now I'm pointing my finger at us as a legislature. We never did anything to enact those recommendations. In that instance, and this is how we spend taxpayer money. I mean, that's what it's an issue for. So, you know, given this committee's huge concern about a drain on the highway user fund, when I hear we're at 15.5 and now we're increasing that, I have some concern.
Mr. Mullen.
Madam Chair, I have the actual spreadsheets from the Department of Natural Resources and the gas tax revenue that was derived in the ATV account in 2005 was $796,547, and $600,000 obviously would be on top of that.
Okay, thank you. Representative Hackbarth, did you have any?
That concludes my testimony, Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You just gave the figures for the contributions of $640 million to Minnesota's economy. I assume that that's 1 year. I wonder how much if we could ever total up the destruction that's been done to Minnesota's land, and some of it is permanent and it's still going on. I wonder what that figure would be. I really do. Then there's been no more. You have made any mention of the fact that according to this study, the 72% of these folks that use ATVs run them on private lands and trails. I'd like to move that we leave this monies where they are now and not transfer. Now, I don't have any language for this bill, but can you draft something to that effect so we can vote on it? And so what I'm saying is that I think we ought to leave the monies where they are now without shifting more money away from the highway user fund and so forth.
Madam Chair, members, I think that might amount to voting against this bill then.
I didn't want to mention that, but I was thinking the same thing.
This is a possible layover, but that's what we'll be doing. Yes, do you have a question? Okay. Representative Hausman.
Madam Chair, I'm assuming that this is held over for possible inclusion in a transportation fund, so we're not acting on it.
We are not acting on it. This is possible inclusion.
Oh, just a minute.
I'm sorry.
This bill is before us, Madam Chair, and I think we have the right to vote on whether it's going to be included or not.
Well, Madam Chair, I believe the motion was to move the bill and bring it before us for possible inclusion at a later time. That was the motion.
That is the motion, Representative Hackbarth, and those are not voted on.
Excuse me, Madam Chair?
So the motion is to lay over for possible inclusion in the transportation finance.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm making a motion that we not lay it over and not include it.
Okay. So, Bess, is there something? Mr. Rob.
This is where I usually ask the governor. Madam Chair, I would ask the chair to just lay the bill over for just have the chair lay the bill over for another time.
Madam Chair.
Madam Chair?
Yeah.
Isn't it my understanding, if we do that, just lay the bill over, we'll have a chance to vote on it again, will we not?
Yes.
I mean, we will have a chance to vote on it.
I do agree. As long as Darrell's out, this is the Finance Committee.
So.
If that is the wish of the chief author, I will leave the bill on the table at this time to bring up at another time.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. Next we have Representative Neil Peterson with House File 3745. Would someone like to move that?
I'm Neil Peterson. I am not Peter Nelson. 3745. I'm the bow tie guy. I learned years ago from Hubert Humphrey, it's not what they know about you, it's just that they remember your name. And so I started wearing bow ties, and it still doesn't work quite.
That's right, Representative. Well, you are correctly registered on this one as Representative Neil Peterson. I will move House File 3745 for lay over for possible inclusion in the Transportation Finance.
That's right, Madam Chair.
Proceed.
Thank you. I have with me Byron Lair from the United Way is here. I also have in the audience Bob Mimik from the Community Involvement Programs, which happens to be a mission that supports people with disabilities. And the reason we're before you today is really for an opportunity for United Way agencies to look at certain affirmation and encouragement for their community-based services that provide transportation as part of their mission. And what we're asking to do is that we would like to amend, you have the amendment before you, statute 473.384, to add the words that a provider of transit service may receive financial assistance from the Met Council through a subcontract.
Right.
Right now that legislation does allow for a contract, but we're asking for a subcontract that would be approved by the council through a primary contractor who is also already with them. And then later, again, add subcontract. What we're probably talking about is we think we've identified 11 agencies that have transportation as part of their mission. We estimate maybe accumulatively it amounts to 1 million miles a year. What this would allow them to do once they were approved as a subcontract would be apply through the Met Council for asking for a rebate on the gas tax. And maybe if everything worked really like it, everybody got involved, maybe we're talking $15,000, $20,000. So it's really not about substance, but it is about encouragement. It is an opportunity for the partnership that exists between the United Way and the community-based service delivery systems that are so vital to the well-being of our citizens. So we are here to testify. We can give you as much as you want or as little as you want. And if Earhart does to me what he did to the last bill, I'm going to ask him to go get a sandwich. We stand before you for questioning.
Any questions, members?
Thank you.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Peterson. You talked about a rebate going back. Would the rebate go back to the primary contractor, and or are you saying that if the individual group subcontracts with this, that the rebate will go back to the subcontractor?
I should let Mr. Lehrer answer that question, but my understanding, it would allow the subcontractor to apply for the rebate. It would come back to them. I.e., if in this case it was Catholic Charities and they were registered as a subcontractor, then Catholic Charities could submit an application for a refund on that through the Met Council.
President
Anderson?
Representative Peterson, would the contractual group or individual providing the service then have to mention the names of the subcontractors that are applying for this in the contract prior to, or when they go out and ask to the Met Council to recognize them as a contractor for services there, are they also then, when they renew their contract, going to have the subcontractors that are going to be affected by this, so that the Met Council knows exactly who they're going to be sending checks out to? Or, I mean, I don't see that. You're asking the subcontractor to be considered, but is it going to be part of the contract then for future?
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, my name is Byron Lehrer. I work for United Way in the Twin Cities. The way this language is drafted, the Met Council would have to approve the subcontract in advance. So an original contractor with the Met Council could not simply go out and issue a bunch of subcontracts that the council would be surprised at later.
No, Jim, I'm just concerned that, you know, we get subcontractors out there and we don't have them listed, or that we're not aware of what who's going to be a part of this. And so I'm just concerned that should be a part of the contract agreement.
Mr. Lehrer?
I think that would. Again, this would not be a telephone call. This would be a written communication between the contractor and the Met Council giving its approval for a specific subcontractor.
Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Peterson, I consider you a friend of transportation. I really do, but I've got some problems I'd just like to ask. Okay. One thing, you know, and not to bring up the rural metro, I don't want to do that, but basically rural transit buses, and this is not gasoline tax, but they pay sales tax. Metro buses don't. And that's one big article. My concern is here now we're looking at one United Way group, and I'm aware of two other groups, nonprofits, want to get involved. But I'm looking at a bigger picture. In our area, we have a lot of veterans groups that take people to Veterans Hospital. Now, that's volunteer. We also got the little DAC buses, you know, and we got a lot of little other volunteer type buses and buses that are paying full tax, and mm-hmm. I think we've got our nose under the tent on this one. And I just like to suggest it. I don't want to be speaking against it, I realize it, but I really think the fiscal implications for the long term are pretty terrific. And my concern is, again, we are dealing with an area that reflects on transit, and I don't think you want to be reflecting something negatively in transit when we get into these transit highway issues. And I'm a little concerned that this wouldn't kind of open the door a little bit.
Representative Peterson.
And I respect where you're coming from. I understand that. But I think we also understand that the great, great need is out there for community-based delivery of services, be it ministry, be it transportation, be it disability, and how do we encourage them, and how do we reinforce what they're doing? And the reality is, in some of these ministries, if they weren't transporting some of these handicapped people, then that responsibility eventually is going to accrue to somebody like Metropolitan Council or some other public entity that's going to have to help do the delivery. And so I guess the question is, you know, it is maybe the nose getting under the tent, as you suggested. But again, how do we deliver this transportation, and how do we encourage these agencies? And again, these are 11 agencies that are now approved by the United Way. They would have to be reapproved again through the Met Council. So the screening process is pretty well defined. I mean, these are all substantive organizations.
Madam Chair, if I could also respond to that, and Representative Leader, each of these agencies is providing services to the elderly and people with disabilities.
they would have to have a vehicle that was handicapped accessible, i.e. it was lift equipped. And if those agencies did not provide those rides, we could shift those people to agencies that do already have contracts, provide those rides, and they would also qualify for the gas rebate. So this simply allows a different agency to do it. Bottom line is, we could get the rebate for agencies like the like DARTS and like the Volunteers of America just by having them pick up these people rather than the agencies that are currently doing it.
Mr. Blair, would this include other United Ways throughout the state as well?
Madam Chair, because this is through the Met Council, my understanding is it would only apply to the Met Council service area. I'd love to be able to expand it, but then you're talking a whole different set of regulations, and you're probably talking a different set of numbers. We're really estimating that we're looking at maybe $10,000 a year in total cost for
thank
this
you. That was my concern.
Language.
Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Mr. Peterson, considering the cost of administering for rebates, wouldn't it be better to say just plain exempt those groups so you wouldn't pay it in the first place and have to go through all the administrative process and say you've got an exemption when they buy their fuel from whoever their dealer is? Like the, I presume a lot of them do that where they don't get a rebate. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's what used to happen. Let me ask Madam Chair, the fiscal analyst, is that correct? We still have exemptions where we, as I remember when I used to work somewhere, that we would plain have an exemption. You didn't have to request a rebate. We're exempted by law from paying the tax.
Mr. Ross.
Madam Chair, Representative Leader, I know that certain organizations get sales tax exemption cards where they don't have to pay sales tax, but since the fuel tax is collected at the wholesale level, I'm not sure that they can apply to do that at the retail level or if they have to go through a rebate process.
Madam Chair, if I may, it used to be it was collected at the wholesale level, but the retailer automatically had a form you filled out as a tax-exempt organization that you didn't pay it. That's the way it used to work, and it's changed.
Madam Chair.
President Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Peterson, you're a testifier. What prevents the United Way and other agencies from getting a contract with the Met Council?
Madam Chair and Representative Anderson, we've talked to the Met Council about doing that, and they suggested to us that the contracting process is pretty expensive, and they actually preferred this language. This was something that we had talked to them about. By doing it in a subcontract, it lets them avoid the expense of going through the contract themselves. But because we require them to approve the subcontract, they still have the same authority to stop it if they don't want it.
Any other questions? If not, I will renew my motion that House File 335, House File 3745 be laid over for possible inclusion in transportation finance.
Thank you very
much. Thank you for your testimony. I'm sure you've all read your minutes. At this point, Representative Hornstein, you've read the news, the approval of the minutes. Are there any exceptions or additions? Not all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's carried. Minutes are adopted. Okay. And we have... I guess, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move that House File 3356 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Transportation Finance Bill. Okay, thank you, Madam Chair and members. Today I've got the Township Road Sign Bill before us. And you might recall in 05 we required that a study be done to look at
look at the inventory and evaluate replacement and maintain signs along town roads. And since that time, $3 million has been appropriated by the federal government under the safety program. But those funds require a 20% match. So, Madam Chair, with me today, I have David Fricke with the Association of Townships to talk about the bill.
Mr. Fricke, please speak.
Madam Chair, I'm Dave Fricke, the Executive Director for the Minnesota Association of Townships. And when the Safety Lou bill was passed, there was a specific line item added to it for the Minnesota Township Hazard Sign Replacement Program. It's the only one in the country. And we led off the country back in the late 80s with sign program, and we saved a tremendous amount of life in the state of Minnesota by signage on our rural road system. And in an effort to kind of keep up with that and to redo it, the bill that you passed last year kind of authorized the steps for us to go to Congress and have them include some funding in the Safety Lou program. So we have a limited period of time. Some additional monies may come through supplemental appropriations over the next year or two. And so with that, we're asking for a match here that would be flexible, and then if it's not utilized, that would be returned to the general fund. A number of years back, this committee authorized bonding for a program when we were trying to initiate it. The bonding was line item vetoed because they said we had to have it from the general fund, that it wasn't a bondable item. And the total cost of this project to us as property owners and that in the state, should we not be able to get our supplemental appropriations, is the total project cost we're estimating right now is close to $30 million. So this is a small step in a very laudable program, we think, to re-sign and reface, and with some of the changes that have been made to the system and to the standards, we think this is an important step. That is your consideration.
Representative Holbert. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Magnus or Mr. Fricke, in an effort to make the money go as far as possible, has there been any discussion about a township match as a portion of this, as far as to kind of meet the standard of the legislature that we also like to see
sure.
some local efforts when we put forward state funds? Has that been discussed? And if so, is there an amount that the townships are comfortable with?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Fricke.
Representative Holbert, the match right now, we have six pilot projects because of the funding. We went out and MnDOT, because of the bill you passed last year, set up the program. We have six pilot counties. The match in those counties is 20%, which is the state-federal match allotment. And we would hope that some of these dollars would go to extend that. We had, and I have Rick Jonas here, but I think it's about 12 counties that actually submitted. And we would hope to be able to expand that a little bit because it's a long way from 6 to 87. So that right now there seems to be a comfort level that we're in that 20% match with the federal to be able to do the pilots.
And, Madam Chair, just for clarifying purposes then, so it would be your intent that 60% would be borne by the federal dollars, 20 by the townships, and 20 by the state?
I've gotten into that. I guess I'd have to call Rick up here and see what we haven't...
Given that this is going to be laid over for possible inclusion, I would appreciate some clarification so that we can see how much money we need to fund the program and what the local effort would be as well.
And Madam Chair, I do have an oral amendment to the bill on line 1.6. The number there would be we're requesting is $1.5 million. Of state funds, and I think that'll get us to the discussion about funding as we go for the possible inclusion money.
$1.9 million.
$1.5 million.
Everybody have that? Page 1, line 6. Amount would be $1.5 million. In discussion? All in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Amendment is adopted. Any other questions, members, or Representative Magnus, any final?
I don't have any
comments. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Magnus or Mr. Fricke, the six pilot projects you mentioned are the counties that were in this. Could you tell me who they were?
Yes, it's Carver County, Mille Lacs, Houston, Todd, McLeod, and Watonwan.
Mr. Madam Chair, have those projects, pilot projects been completed as far as the analysis or the study?
We've had meetings. The work on setting up how they're going to go at these pilots and what approach each of them is going to take to determine which is going to be the best way to do this on into the future is yet to come. They expect to actually do the work in 07. So we're kind of approaching that. The allotments from the federal government right now were like 20% per year is what they would be bringing down. They were cut somewhat from about 600,000 down to about 516,000 each year because of the federal cuts in the programs. So we're right now in that kind of get to know each other, get to find out what's going on. And MnDOT's had a meeting the end of last month with the towns and the county engineers that are helping to coordinate the program.
So, Madam Chair, Mr. Fricke, you expect a report back by 08?
That's when the program right now would end.
Okay.
We have to have all of this done. If we're going to use federal dollars, while the 5 years exist for Safety Lou, it may be continued on out some of the supplemental appropriations that we would hope that the individual congressman would be able to ask for next January for those that want to proceed with this beyond the pilot area. That's kind of where we're headed.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions? Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I understood that we need to match 20%, and if we got $3 million from the federal, what would 20% of $3 million be?
600,000, excuse me.
Mr.
Fickey. 100,000. Well, Mr. Chair, why wouldn't we put 600,000 in there instead of 1.5?
It's our hope that we would get some supplemental funding next year as part of the program. And certainly, if that's all we're going to do, that's fine. We'd probably be back next year if we get supplemental funding to put that. And I think that's why the language was there that we would return it, if it's not used, back to the general fund. Just giving us some flexibility to get some additional dollars.
And, Madam Chair, as I understand it, Representative Holbrook is suggesting that we also put a 20% match in there for townships.
I think that historically the legislature has looked upon local effort favorably and providing state money as well, and that's why I asked the question, and these gentlemen will get back to us as far as what they're able to do with it to help, and this is going to be laid over today, so we have some time to evaluate what that exact dollar amount is for the true need and how the committee would like to approach it.
It's our intent, huh?
Any other discussion? Representative Magnus, will you renew your motion?
Yes, Madam Chair, we renew my motion and House File 3356 is amended to be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Transportation.
Thank you for your testimony.
Transportation Finance. Thank you.
And then we have one more item.
One more. Thank you, Madam Chair. I have an amendment. I don't really have it figured out yet which bill to amend it to. We'll still be watching some of the bills to come out yet. But I do want to get the amendment heard. And we talked about it a little bit the other day. Today I have with me John Apitz. Slipped in Bill Gardner here on me. And I want to talk about the railroad program. Recall we talked about this when we had some testimony on Representative Seifert's bill a few weeks ago, when we talked about some of the difficulties some of the short line railroads are having meeting the needs they have if they have a large processing plant next to them to rehabilitate the rails to accommodate the larger cars that are needed now. So, Madam Chair, I'd turn it over to my
So this is for purposes of discussion?
Just for purpose of discussion, I don't have a bill to put it on at this time.
Okay. Please state your name.
Madam Chair, Representatives, my name is Bill Gardner. I'm Director of Freight, Rail, and Waterways with MnDOT. There should be a handout being distributed to you, which gives you a little bit of information about the Minnesota Rail Service Improvement Program. We have had an opportunity to review the proposed change to the program that Representative Magnus described and think a little bit about what the impacts would be on the program, and I want to talk about that for a minute or two, but I also thought this would be an opportunity to tell you a little bit more about the program in general for those of you who are not terribly familiar with it. The Minnesota Rail Service Improvement Program, or MRSI as we fondly call it, has been around for about 30 years. And it really originally was developed in response to the wholesale abandonment of branch lines by the Class I railroads, particularly back into the 70s and into the 80s. And what this program allowed was for smaller railroads, short line and regional railroads, to take over some of that service, to preserve service to a lot of our communities throughout the state, and to continue to provide competitive options for shippers, the companies that are trying to move our products and materials. In recent years, there's been not much abandonment activity. Most of the program has been focused on improvements to infrastructure, trying to upgrade a track, trying to deal with issues of age and condition, and also access for shippers and so forth to meet some of the current needs that are in the industry. And you can see from the program materials kind of where the money has gone. We have invested about $77 million in state funds over the past 28 years, and that's been matched by about $50 million in federal and private funds and other funds. And we've completed 261 projects really throughout the state, at least where there is rail service, again, to try to preserve rail service and improve it. So we think the program has had a strong role in maintaining a good rail system in Minnesota. We carry about 35% of all the freight that moves in Minnesota on the rail system. That may sound like a modest number, but it's actually significantly higher than many other states enjoy. And certainly there's opportunity to improve the balance of the system, but we do have a relatively balanced freight system in Minnesota. As you can see on the handout, the MRSI program has five different program areas. I won't go through each of these, but the Rail Purchase Assistance Program and the State Rail Bank Program are really direct financial assistance. Those are not loan programs. What we're really talking about is a change that would affect the rail rehab component of this program. That program provides loans to rehabilitate and preserve rail lines. We provide currently loans for projects on rail lines that are owned by public rail authorities, and the state will pay up to 80% of the cost of that with a loan, with the authority paying 10% and the shippers or the users paying the other 10%. We also provide loans for projects that are owned by private entities, the railroads, and in that case we provide a 70% state loan, a 20% railroad share, and a 10% shipper share. I just want to comment, increasingly it's more and more difficult to attract those shipper shares. It's kind of a chicken and egg conundrum. They're more than willing in many instances to pay for transportation service, to pay and are interested in using rail service. They're not necessarily interested in investing in that rail line itself, and that's an increasingly difficult challenge. There are a number of needs, emerging needs, that we would like to address with this program that don't necessarily fit into a nice and neat category as the program is currently structured. We've seen a lot of changes in the rail industry and in freight movement in recent years. A couple of examples, for example, the rapid growth of the ethanol industry is driving the need for improved rail service, both to bring raw materials to those plants and then to transport the finished products to both regional and national markets, and we'd certainly like to see that freight carried on the rail system as opposed to our local and state roads. Another example, identity-preserved grain, which has to be transported in containers. Those are usually moved in trucks to a rail hub and then transferred onto the rail lines. We need to have better intermodal container handling capability that's strategically located around the state in the correct locations. We have rail yards that are posing problems now in terms of being poor neighbors with neighborhoods, for example, that are deteriorating due to age and condition. And frankly, in some cases, they're just located in the wrong location because logistics have changed, the freight patterns have changed, and we need some relocation of those yards. We need better connections between rail lines, in particular between smaller railroads and the larger railroads, the Class 1 railroads, that provide access to national markets for our shippers. And finally, we need to upgrade our track. We just need heavier gauge track because the standard in the industry now is heavier rail cars, and that's increasing all the time. So those are examples of some current and emerging needs that we really think need to be addressed, that possibly could be addressed with this type of change and other changes that we're thinking about. We're working with the Rail Association to document the needs that are out there, and we're planning on doing a more comprehensive evaluation of this program over the next 9 months to a year, and expect to come back next year with some additional changes that we think would benefit the program. In terms of the proposed change itself, our official position currently is that we neither oppose it or support it. The governor's office and the Department of Finance have not had an opportunity to review the proposal to determine its impacts. But I do want to comment on what we think might be some of the impacts of the changes. What this would basically do would place this program, or at least this portion of the program, on an equal footing with the Minnesota Port Development Assistance Program, which our office also administers. Under that program, it's a very similar provision. We can provide up to 80% of the cost of the projects with grants to public port authorities. We would continue to make loans to private entities, to railroads, and to shippers as is needed, so we wouldn't be impacting that. We think there'd be some increased flexibility in the program to address the kinds of needs that I was just talking about. And finally, we think this would allow us to maybe better handle those projects that are identified by the legislature for direct funding that don't fit into a particular category that we have now, to better handle it within the program. We're asked to administer these projects through the program, and now we would have a category for that. We want to do some additional evaluation of the overall program over the next year, and we have the Rail Association with us today as well if you need information regarding their needs. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Holbert. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Gardner, on page 1, line 7, I'm having a problem with the three words owned by a political subdivision. I'm concerned that if we only allow this money to be available to a certain class of short line, I'm assuming that in some levels they compete with each other, that we've created an unfair playing field. Could you comment on that? And
I'll probably ask either Representative Magnus or Mr. Appetz to comment on that. That is my understanding, is not the intent of that language, and it may be a matter of interpretation of what the political subdivision refers to. It's my understanding the intent is to allow it to be made to any regional rail authority and any railroad that they might be working with.
Representative Holbrook, would you like Mr. Appetz? Representative Magnus.
Well, I've done comment. It's one of the things we've been changing back and forth between amendments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is John Appetz. I'm with the law firm of Messerly and Kramer, and I represent the Minnesota Regional Railroads Association, the subject of your conversation here. And I want to thank Mr. Gardner for the excellent presentation of the program. It's great. He's a new guy. He got this job about three months ago. And
that's improvement, too. My dad over here.
I'm not going there. That said, Madam Chair, here's the dilemma with this particular language, and I appreciate your consideration for other railroads. A good portion of this program right now is funded through bond proceeds. And bond proceeds restrict the use of bond money to public entities, essentially. There is a
the Constitution restricts the use of bond proceeds to the public entities, designation of public entities. And there's also a change which allowed this program to come to pass. That change was enacted in 1982, which actually changed the Constitution to say you can also use bonding money to fix up railroads for this purpose. But in conversation with the department at this point, thank you for your help in getting us into this discussion, without perhaps going as far as meeting the needs that are identified right here and now this year would be sufficient, and then perhaps next year go beyond that. Happy to open it up, because I think the Constitution, I've rethought this, and I think the Constitution does allow it to be bond money to be used more broadly for this rehabilitation purpose. But right now, you get two projects in front of this committee, or in front of the Capital Investment Committee, one being the Glencoe Congestion Mitigation Project. It's about $700,000. The other being the Minnesota Valley Regional Railroad, Minnesota Prairie Line Project, which runs between Gibbon and Norwood. That's the one we talked about a couple of weeks ago, which would upgrade that rail, that track to haul ethanol from from Winthrop onto another rail line and into the Twin Cities. So we went with this because we thought it was sufficient for now. It meets those particular issues. We hope to come back and discuss that further later on. If you want to do it more broadly, you got the vote. I don't.
Good day, Magnus. Did you have a comment?
No, go ahead.
Well, just for clarification purposes, you kind of talked around. Did the 1982 constitutional change allow the bond proceeds to be used for rails that are privately owned?
Mr. Evans is looking, I believe.
Mr. Walls is taking a look at that.
Mr. Walls. Mr. Walls.
Madam Chair, Representative Holberg, I was just trying to look at what the Constitution currently says. There is some interpretation that the usage for railroads is fairly broad. One example would be the fact that finance has determined that North Star Corridor and improvements to the rail line owned by Burlington Northern would be a bondable expense by the legislature.
Good point.
Mm-hmm.
I think the answer to the
question, Mr. Evans.
Madam Chair, I think the answer to the question is with or without. With that, it's more restrictive, clearly. It meets the needs that have been identified this particular year. Without it, I think we could use it broadly, and there wouldn't be an opposition to that from, obviously, from the Railroad Association. I will not speak to the department, however. So if you were to strike those words owned by a political subdivision, that would achieve your particular objective, Madam Chair.
Mr. Evans, do we know what the fiscal impact would be?
Not until we get some money, Madam Chair. Right now, Bill can answer this, I think, better than I, but there have been over time about $34 million put into this fund. About $25 million of that has been in the form of bond proceeds. About another $25 million have been put in general fund money. Most of that has been lent out and revolves back into the fund. A couple of years ago, when we were fixing the budget, about $6.5 million of that was grasped, because it was just sitting there waiting to be loaned out. Mm-hmm. But it was grasped for the to fix the budget, essentially. And so those funds were lost, and I think they've got, and I should let Bill speak to this, about $1.5 million available right now.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what he's going to do.
Okay. Mr. Gardner.
Yeah. Madam Chair, Representatives, our balance is a bit higher than that. It's about $5 million at the current time. We take applications on a quarterly basis, so depending upon the level of applications, that balance kind of goes up and down. We do receive loan repayments on a regular basis, but most of these loans are stretched out over a period of 10 to 15 years. So we do need new infusions of capital into the program. I think that this change could have the effect of stimulating demand for the program, which we think would be a good thing, and build the further support for the program. At the same time, we would be addressing some of these real needs that are out there.
Okay. Representative Hausman.
Just to follow up on the question that Representative Holberg asked, on this handout that we got on line 96, BN, I'm assuming, would would refer to Burlington Northern. That particular one looks like it was entirely state-funded as opposed to a kind of a partnership between state and railroad, which on most of these really sizable amounts, there tends to have been a partnership. So clearly, that was not a problem in that, I mean, assuming these are bonding dollars, that wasn't a problem for the state doing that just for Burlington Northern?
Madam Chair, Representative, I believe because that's a rail bank, it was a rail bank project that functions differently. That's not a loan situation. So those are direct dollars that were allocated to preserve that corridor for future transportation use.
Representative Hart. Thank you, Mr. Why don't we have a bill we're looking at here, or what are we looking at? Is this going to be...
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Earhart, this language is brought forward when we were doing our capital investment recommendations, and there wasn't anybody in the room to address the questions that we had regarding whether or not this money that we did have a medium rating for the rail fund in our recommendations, and we didn't have anybody in the room that could answer the questions that at least I felt needed to be answered before we could forward rider language to the Capital Investment Committee. So what we're trying to do here is play catch-up, and I don't know, maybe Representative Hauser knows when they're planning on passing the Capital Investment Bill out of committee, but I was hoping for some resolution of this issue on whether or not the committee would support at least a portion of those funds being used for grants as opposed to loans as included in the bonding bill. And if Representative Dorman isn't including any real money, then it's probably a moot point, but we are hopeful that he will heed the committee's recommendation and put at least some money in for rail.
Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Would this money also extend lanes that are not, for some reason, that build a new lane roads, would that be possible? In other words, if this is the money that would build the railroad across Queensland's farm, then I'd be happy to work for it. But besides that, I have another question. How are the properties, the projects determined? I mean, is there a board that does this, or how do you select out of all of the things that have to be done?
Depending upon, I'm sorry, Madam Chair, Representatives, depending upon the program element, we do several different things. We do a survey of shippers to try to gauge what the demand for the improved service might be. We do a cost-benefit analysis to try to gauge what the new service might generate in terms of new car loads on the rail service and so forth. So we do have some criteria for selecting the projects.
Well, Madam Chair, does this mean that we have a 3-year plan, a 10-year plan, and a 20-year plan? And how those projects come out of there are kind of determined for some odd reason that this project should go forward over that project when you have $11 or no?
Madam Chair, Representative, that's exactly what we're striving to move towards, which uh-huh. is the manner in which we do it with the Minnesota Port Development Program. The association, Rail Association, has taken a first shot at documenting needs on a statewide basis, and we want to flesh that out and try to identify what our long-term needs are and try to make some priority decisions.
Okay, Madam Chair. Is there, do you have a breakdown of how this the monies you spend on these projects splits between the Southern County and rural Minnesota?
Madam Chair, Representative, I don't have that at hand. I could get that to you.
That would be interesting. I just got a listing of the bridge projects between rail and Venomous and Southern County Metro. It was astounding.
And rural's not getting enough, is it?
Representative Earhart, then we'll talk about the commuter rail. Any other questions? Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I was just going to point out the initial monies that they got for this rail service about 20 years ago were general fund monies. So really, the the pot, if you want to consider it, if it really gets hairy, I presume we'd have to add up all the general fund monies to more, know how much we put in. You know, he's got something to play with because those were revolving funds. Subsequent to that, in the last few years, it's been bond monies.
Thank you. Any other...
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I think I'm going to just trying to get some feel for where the committee is. I am going to move that we delete on line 7, owned by a political subdivision, and see if there's support for that in the committee. I think that we should have an even playing field for all rail companies in the state, given that it's an integrated system, and if it is the goal of the committee to get as much freight on rail and off our highways as possible, I don't think we should limit the ability to help achieve that goal to just a subset of the rail operators.
Okay, Representative Holbert has moved to delete on line 1.7, owned by a political subdivision. By a political subdivision, correct? Right. Any discussion?
I have no objection to that. What occurs to me, though, is it may not matter what we put in an amendment if there is, in fact, an understanding of what is bondable. It's possible that how we change this would still not necessarily open it up.
And if I might, Mr. Walls did confirm that the amendment did allow for investment in private rail as well.
Madam Chair, are you going to allow Representative Holbert to put an amendment on this? You did not let me do that on the last thing we talked about.
Your committee is coming next, Representative Earhart, and we'll allow you it next hour. Any other discussion?
Madam Chair, was Representative Earhart being mean to you all the time?
That was a...
keep him away from the chocolate cake today. He's been mean fabulous.
Okay, you have an amendment on the table. Any other discussion? Otherwise, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion is carried. Amendment is adopted. Any other discussion? Representative Holbert,
I think there's two more issues, at least in my mind, relative to this program. I think that, you know, we've set up a pretty good revolving loan program. And so to take all of this money and make it available for grants would probably put some problems in the revolving loan program if we want both options. So I think the committee should weigh in on that. And then this increase to 80% of the cost of any rail line, I'm not sure, would that then allow for 20% federal and 80% grant and they not have to have any local efforts? Or those are the two remaining questions in my mind around the issue.
President Magnus or Mr. Gardner, would you care to comment on those?
Madam Chair, Representative, I believe on the first statement, we wouldn't be taking all of the money and putting it into the grant program. We'd still, those other elements of the program are still loan-based, and those would be preserved, things like capital improvements directly to shippers for spur lines and so forth, or the rail bank or purchase assistance. So this is only a portion of the funds, and I can't say today what portion that might be. We are interested in getting direction from the finance department in terms of whether or not bond funds, for example, can be used for private entities. The conversations we've had so far would indicate that they could not be, but we'd like further direction on that. And your last question regarding, I'm sorry.
Well, if we don't understand this completely, you could have the legislature give all of your money for grants and cut out the loan program out from underneath you, and that's what I'm trying to figure out here. The language in the constitutional amendment states both public and private. So, and I know that there was an Attorney General's opinion early on in the North Star process asking for clarification of whether or not the money could be used in a private rail for that particular purpose, and it was, the opinion was yes, that it could. So I don't know who's telling you that it can't be and what their reasons are. But again, I think the committee should weigh in on if we want to continue the loan program and allow a portion of the money in the rail service to be grants or not. And if so, what's a reasonable amount of local match to require in order to get a grant? And Representative Hausman, do you know when capital investments plan is
going to be all of our committee, Madam Chair, on April 4th.
So I think maybe what we're going to do is maybe lay this on the table at this point, get a little more information from MnDOT. Representative Magnus, I think you could have the opportunity to maybe speak with committee members. I certainly would welcome any comments from committee members, and Thursday we'll try and bring some draft language to forward to Representative Dorman and the Capital Investment Committee.
Any other comments? Then Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Have any concluding comments?
I really don't. I think thank Mr. Gardner did a great presentation on this, and I think we need to look at all the intermodal forms of transportation and try to do what we can for all of the modes.
And we did not have a motion on this. We were just for discussion purposes, since we did not have a number or to amend it to anything. So we will just...
No, but I think we did have my motion to delete the five words if we could vote on that. That seems to be pretty straight up as a starting point, and if the committee is ready to vote on at least that.
That was adopted.
Oh, good.
Yeah, that was voted on.
We adopted that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome. Okay. With that, the meeting is adjourned.